Herman Carlton Gray. And this is side two, tape number one, Friday, the 4th of November, 1977. It's 11 a.m. I found this Army accident report, and they came up with some mechanical problem that may have caused their difficulty. Do you remember in the repair and whatnot of the airplane, anything that you found that was of any interest along those lines?
No, I can't say that I did, but I don't doubt but what they could turn up something like that, but I can't recall anything.
Well, I'd like your opinion about this, because I am not an expert on mechanics or props or whatnot, even though I am a power plant mechanic and have my license and have had training. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not even a good mechanic. However, she had the Hamilton Standard constant speed props, the counterweights versus oil pressure, and it had a low and a high pitch stop. And there was two cams they used to put in. One was a 15-degree cam and one was a 20-degree cam, depending on whether you want low to high to have 15 degrees of range or 20 degrees of range. But anyway, were you aware that on the flight from Oakland to Honolulu in March of 1937, the one that Paul Mance and Amelia and Harry Manning and Noonan went, that a little over halfway across, the right-hand propeller froze and became a fixed pitch in cruise?
No.
You didn't know that?
We wouldn't have anything to do with the props at all, you know.
Well, they got some Army and Navy people together who were used to working on those props, and they had an awful time with it. They worked on it for a day and a half, and they finally got the prop unfroze, and I guess they took crocus cloth to it, and I don't know whatever, but it was burnished and whatever, and they got it fixed up and got it working. But when they came time to reinstall it, they weren't sure what the low and high pitch stops were. So they took a prop protractor and checked the left prop, and they set the right one to the left one. And they're not sure that they set it correctly. And, of course, in the on the takeoff, if she'd had the wrong low pitch stop, she wouldn't have got the same, at whatever manifold pressure she set, she wouldn't have got the same RPM, and she wouldn't have got the same horsepower out of the left and right engines. The wind was practically calm that morning, and as she lifted the tailwheel off the ground, the airplane started to veer to the right. Well, there was no wind to account for it. Tire pressures might account for it, but I doubt it. But it's very possible that if she was getting less horsepower of the right engine than the left for whatever reason, especially if the prop was set incorrectly, the airplane would start to go off to the right until she gets the tail up out of the fuselage and wing wash and gets it effective. But because she was a little tail heavy because of the heavy load and because of the slow acceleration because of the heavy load, and maybe she forced the tail up a little early, it got a little off to the right too much on her, so she pulled back power on the left engine. And as you know, this is a pretty tricky maneuver. And she stopped the turn to the right, but as usual, she overcorrected, and it got going to the left, and it got going too much, and the airplane started skidding sideways, and it eventually buckled the right-hand gear, and of course, she just chopped the power and cut the switches. You have any comments about the possibility of that being the case, or
well,
about the damage that you saw afterwards?
No, I don't recall this particular instance, but I don't doubt but what this might have happened. But as far as the props, that was not our function at all. If anything was to be done with the props, well, we would just have the prop man, we might pull the props, but we'd send them over to the prop shop, over at PAC or wherever it was, the prop shop was, and they would do all the work or whatever was necessary. And we absolutely had nothing to do with any overhaul of props or changes or any of the rest of them.
So if the prop shop had done something wrong that caused the whole thing originally, they wouldn't have reported it in the end, probably. If nobody else had said anything about it, they would probably just have let it pass too then.
Well, if the prop shop had done something wrong, how were they... how are they going to find out that they've done something wrong? Who is going to tell them? And
If the prop came back to the same shop who worked on it originally, see, the props were all bent and everything, and they would have had to gone back and new blades installed.
Well,
probably
they'd gone back and had new blades installed then, and I don't know if the difficulty would have shown up then or not. That possibly would have.
But it probably would have gone back to the same place that worked on it originally. This was the point I was...
You say the Army set the stops by...
By a prop protractor from the
other
one. By a
protractor. Why didn't they get the readings that they were supposed to have?
They didn't have the manuals, I guess. They didn't have the experience. I don't think they'd ever seen a Lockheed 10.
They had a telephone, didn't they?
They probably did. Maybe, perhaps they did. Well, though, it was in the testimony in the Army Air Corps report, they said that they established what the low-pitch stop should be by measuring with a prop protractor the other engine, which is not too bad.
Sure.
Okay. Do you remember if there were any modifications or changes made to the airplane or just repair to the airplane while it was in the...
Well, I would say there were modifications and changes made, but I can't recall what they were.
Nothing dramatic that you could remember?
The only thing dramatic I can remember was we changed her tail wheel because she gave me the old tail wheel, and we installed a new one.
Still have it?
Oh, I did have, but I don't know where it is now.
Oh.
Well, now, what was the... Now, was that a locking tail wheel?
A locking tail wheel?
Locking. One you could lock? Or was it a free swivel?
Gee, I don't even recall that, but I imagine it was locking because I think I'm pretty sure that we... All our tail wheels were locking. But it was a standard tail wheel. I mean, as I can recall, when the pile of junk come back, this is when she discarded the tail wheel and we gave her a new tail wheel. And this is when she gave me this old tail wheel that I had laying around up on the ranch in Topanga for 25 years or so. And I suppose it's still laying around up there. I don't know.
You still have your ranch?
We sold it.
Oh, you sold it.
When we come down here, we burnt all our bridges.
Oh.
Well, now, getting back to our airplane and the repair of it, there was quite extensive damage done, but I guess nothing really terribly structural. It was just a lot of nacelle work and a lot of belly work.
Well, you'd have a lot of damage to an airplane and still have lots to repair, you know. I mean, when you smash a landing gear and buckle a wing and knock the tail servers off, well, there's still plenty there that just need to be put back in shape. There's quite a lot of damage, but nothing that when we finished the airplane, it was a first-class airplane.
Do you remember that on the test flights afterwards that the rigging on it and whatnot seemed to be very good?
I don't recall, but if it wasn't good, why we didn't own about it and kind of have corrected it.
I have a Lockheed report that I went over with Kelly Johnson that he flew with Amelia and did some fuel consumption tests. Just before the first flight. And just before the first flight, there was a fellow by the name of, he was touted to be a Bendix engineer. His name was Curl Remling.
Remlin.
Curl Remlin. And he brought out from Washington, D.C., a loop antenna, which was installed above the airplane. And he bought, they sent out via Railway Express a new Bendix RA-1 receiver. And these were companion units, and it had a little control box in between the two. It said in the newspapers that Lockheed engineers were installing this radio, and this was in February of 1937, just before her first flight. Do you have any recollection of this?
No, but I wouldn't doubt it at all. Don't forget that this is something that our radio department would install.
Do you know who was in the radio department at that time?
Not at that time, no.
You remember Biff Marshall?
at the radio department. Norm Loop was my man that was in charge of the electrical department. And
how do you spell that?
L-O-O-P.
Is he still alive?
Yes, but I don't know where he is. I think he is. He's somewhere in the hilllands up there, but I haven't seen or heard of him for years.
Around Glendale, you mean, or Burbank in the hills?
Where would you say that the boy said he was? I had a bunch of them down here on my birthday. Lake Gregory, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Lake, you know where Lake Gregory is?
No, is that in Los Angeles County?
I think it's in the San Bernardino Mountains.
Okay.
Mountains, I think. I think Lake Burr. And I, as I recall, that's where he originally went when he quit. And it was stated that he was still there or something, but I haven't heard him for
now
years.
That's Norman Loop.
That's right.
Norman Loop. And you remember anybody in the radio department?
No, I don't. No, I don't remember who is.
Remember a red-headed guy? Red?
Oh, you mean Radio Red? No, I don't remember him.
Hey, he's got a sense of humor. Okay, I've been unable to locate anyone in the radio department that ever remembers installing it. There was a fellow that worked for United Airlines who also moonlighted for Amelia by the name of Joe Gurr, G-U-R-R, and he did some radio work for her. But I think he did all that over at United Aircraft, or Paul Mance's hangar.
Yeah.
Now, being that you're... talk just personally about your experiences with Amelia, what you thought of her and someone to work for, and what the scuttlebutt was as her as a pilot, or anything else that you can think of.
Well, Amelia was a very likable person, and... back in the Vega days, when the Vega wife, she'd have her airplane in there for repairs, and she would come in the morning, and we'd go over all the things that she wanted done and assure what we had done in one thing or another. And I can remember one particular time that those were the days when we used to break the shock cord on the tail wheel, the tail skid, you know. And you used to have to crawl back in this fuselage and repair either the bulkhead where it was broken out or do a lot of repairs back in there. And I had this was in the Depression days, and I had a Santa Monica contractor. He was quite a builder, or quite a guy. Working for me because he was down and out, but he was a good mechanic, but he was a very business-minded, very shy, retiring sort of a guy, but he was a good woodworker. And there comes Lisa with a mouse. And this one time they had repairs to be making the back end of the Amelia's airplane, and Fred Jones was back in there working on this, and it was in a prone position. He'd have to get right back with his head back where he was working, and the rest of them spread out. And about that time, when Amelia was around there, and I was telling her about that, and she wanted to see what the repairs was. And I said, well, go on and get in there. So she climbs up and over the bulkhead and crawls in over Fred and back where he was to see what the hell he was doing and one thing or another. And this poor guy, I didn't get him out of that damn fuselage for 2 hours. and he was still red.
Did you find her knowledgeable?
Oh, yeah. She knew what the hell was all about. Yeah, she was a very nice person. And she knew what she was doing on airplanes and all the rest of them. And you could, if she asked you to do something, she'd take your word for it after you did it. And she, when you could show her what you'd done, and she could tell you if it was the way she wanted it and if she was satisfied with it and all the rest of it. She was a very nice person.
Okay, and did you ever see her get angry, or did she have any traits that you...
I don't think the media ever got angry. Some of the... No, I don't. I never saw her angry.
What if you did something wrong?
If I did something wrong?
Or anybody did something wrong.
Well, in those days, we never used to do anything wrong.
Very good. We've changed a lot since then. On Amelia's airplane.
In those days, if we did anything wrong, nobody knew about it anymore.
I see.
No, there were no other experts.
No.
There's a couple things about Amelia's airplane that I've... I want to ask you. It's in my mind. I have a picture of Amelia that was taken in Darwin, Australia. And she is loading some things in or out of the airplane. And one part that she has, obviously, is a tailwheel. So was the tailwheel a fairly critical item on the Lockheed 10 and she carried an extra one?
Well, I would say that you got a good point there. I would say maybe yes. I don't remember it was, but remember that this airplane was very heavily loaded and would take off and land with heavy loads, and I wouldn't doubt at all about what she had tailwheel trouble.
Okay. Another thing she had that I found most peculiar is she had a control wheel. Now, I wonder if that was removed from the right-hand side so that it wouldn't be in Noonan's way when he sat there and worked his sextant or something out of the cockpit.
Well, I don't remember this.
But the picture very definitely shows a control wheel as part of the spare parts. I can't... Can you think of any reason why she would carry a spare control wheel? That's rather a non-critical item as far as braking or anything.
Well, the only reason I can think of there is it's something that she would install for to have under certain circumstances to have another wheel or something like that.
Would the control wheel be easily removed from the right-hand side?
If she had one, it very likely would be. I mean, if that's what the purpose of it would be made so it would be easy to remove. But I don't recall this at all.
I see. Another thing that perplexes me greatly is that the airplane, you remember it had a little lavatory in the very rear of the cabin? It was standard in the Lockheed 10. And on the right-hand side, there was a window. Now, was that window an escape hatch?
I don't recall, but I would say it wasn't. I don't remember any escape hatch there. I would say it wouldn't be, because if you were going to build an escape hatch in the airplane, you'd put it where somebody could use it besides one person that happened to be in the laboratory.
Well, now she had all of her life rafts and all of her emergency equipment stored back in the lavatory. The lavatory had actually been removed. And I have a picture taken in March showing a window in that area. I have a picture taken on the ramp in Miami at the end of May when she was working on her airplane in Miami. And it seems to be open, or at least there is a rectangular opening there that doesn't seem to have any glass. It seems like it's an opening. And then I have a picture taken a couple days later, and it's all skinned over, except that where that opening is, the skin is shinier than in other locations. And I just wondered if that had been turned from a window into a metal escape hatch. Is there any way you could
No. Possibility. I can't recall anything on that.
I have a picture taken in Darwin, Australia that very definitely shows that rectangular area being metal, but being of a different discoloration, you know, a little less oxidation than the rest of the airplane. And if she installed her emergency gear in the back, in that particular area of the fuselage, there was a window there originally, would have been very extremely difficult to have installed an escape hatch at that point?
You could install an escape hatch anywhere if you wanted.
Just wanted to beef it up.
Nothing to cut a hole in the fuselage and put in anything you wanted to. There was no problem.
Okay. You don't remember anything about an escape hatch in the rear? Okay. Now, I want to... can you think of anything else about your thoughts about the flight or anything else? characteristics?
No, because, as I say, we had very little to do with the flight parts because she always had Paul Mance or something like that to take care of those. Our only flights would be when she had the Vega, maybe she'd take off from the factory and go someplace,
Okay, I have another question. When her airplane came back to be repaired after she cracked it up at Luke Field in Honolulu, and they did major repairs. I have photographs showing, you know, all the work they were doing and the wing structure and whatnot. I have the weight and balance for the airplane before the crash, but I've never been able to find it after the crash. Do you think that the repair and the way that it was done would have added much weight to the airplane? Usually repairs always add a little weight, but maybe the factory could do a particularly good job.
I would say not, very likely not, because I don't know. He should be able to get that from Kelly Johnson. But if he was going to replace a wing, for instance, you'd put another wing like she had before. Or if you're going to replace the landing gear, why, it would be the same landing gear you had. Or if you replace the strut on the landing gear, it would be the equivalent of what was there before, and so on.
Think the weight and
balance? All this stuff broke up. You didn't just take and put a bunch of patch stuff on top of it. Everything all had to be brand new.
So probably the weight and balance of the airplane would be almost the same as before.
I would definitely say that very likely it would be, yes.
Okay.
Unless she added some more components.
She made a couple changes. She one thing she added was stripping a pump to her fuselage tanks.
Well, if you add that wouldn't amount to more than 20 pounds or something like that.
This was so she'd get the last ounce of gas out of the tanks, I believe, what this stripping pump would have been for. She evidently felt that the low airspeeds and high angle of tanks, she wasn't getting all of the residual fuel out, and so she put in stripping pumps. Okay, now I want to get into an area, and I just have to ask these questions. I want you to just say whatever you really feel. One, you've probably heard stories that her airplane had been modified and special camera holes and everything had been put in. Do you know anything about anything like that at all?
Not from a first-hand information, no. But I wouldn't doubt but what they were extra camera holes and all the rest of it. This is something that she had this done by somebody else besides us.
It wasn't done at Lockheed.
I don't say it wasn't, but I don't recall it being done there. Possibly some of it might have been, but I don't even remember any particular thing that was done like that.
You've heard the story that after the airplane left the United States, larger engines were put on the airplane, and this accounts for high speeds and whatnot. Do you have any comments about that?
No, I don't remember ever hearing that.
Okay. You realize how difficult it would be to put a larger engine than that on the Lockheed 10. It was an oversized engine. It would ruin the weight and balance. It would. What engine are they talking about? Because there really wasn't anything.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that.
Okay. You remember the XP 37, was it? The pressurized high-altitude version that Lockheed was building in 1937 for the Army Air Corps, the first pressurized airplane ever built?
I don't recall anything about that.
Okay, that must have been in a different...
I got a hazy remembrance that there was such a thing, but I don't...
It was basically a Lockheed 10. No. They had supercharged engines and a pressurized fuselage on it. In fact, they won the... what was the awards dinner we went to in Washington, D.C. about a year and a half ago?
Collier Trophy.
They won the Collier Trophy that year for the first pressurized airplane. Okay. You remember at the time that Melia went in, that of any talk around Lockheed or any scuttlebutt or anything that you can remember at all about anything whatsoever, except?
No, I can't recall lots of talk, but I can't recall what it was all about or any other amount of anything.
What did you think happened to Amelia?
She got lost.
I talked to Kelly Johnson, and he said that they calculated about when she should have ran out of fuel, and from the data they had from when she took off and whatnot, that's about when she should have ran out of fuel during her last radio transmission. You believe that she got lost and had to ditch the airplane?
Well, she got lost and she had to ditch the airplane because she ran out of gas. Then she got lost, didn't know where she was. She ran out of gas. What else could she do but ditch the airplane?
Okay. Do you know anything about the flight characteristics of the Lockheed 10 that were any different than any other airplane?
No.
For instance, one thing on the fuel system in a Lockheed 10, the fuel tanks fed through a common Y to both engines. In other words, you didn't have a left system and a right system. So when one engine quit, they were both going to quit.
Now, I know nothing about the flying of it or anything like that.
Is Hal Hibbard still alive?
As near as I know, yes.
He was a test pilot, wasn't he?
No. He was an engineer. He was chief engineer. And he was the director up until, well, I think, a year or so ago that he retired from being a director of Lockheed.
Do you know where he might live? I can find him probably through Lockheed.
Might be such a thing as is on the Starduster manual. It might give his address.
Okay, I have
that. You got one of those?
Yeah.
You have one handy?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you have him let you
right,
look at his?
Marie, do you have any questions?
No, I just feel that maybe he could give you a little more idea about her personally. Evidently, you liked her very much, and she knew her business really well, as far as you were concerned.
This is true. Let's face it this way, that she and I wasn't buddy-buddies, but we were the only personal contact I had with her was the fact that when she come in for work, why, I'd work with her, and she'd tell me what she wants, and we'd consult and all that. But as for taking her out to lunch or bringing her home to dinner and like that,
You had no social contact.
No social contact whatsoever with
her.
But
when she was around, she was very knowledgeable, very easy to get along with. And
nothing but what was right there in the factory. She had no, maybe some of the rest of them, why I'd bring them home for dinner or some damn thing like that. But not a media, never bring media home. Media was a very distinct person. She was a lady, and she was very nice.
Did you meet her husband, GP?
Yes and no. I think that I've seen her husband around there when she was around here, but I never was ever introduced personally to him or anything like that. I wasn't on that basis at all.
How about Paul Mance? Did you meet him?
Well, Paul Mance and I were both buddies.
What did you think of Paul?
Oh, Paul was the biggest BO there ever was, but he was really a flyer.
But how about, did he know what he was doing when he was
Paul
advising?
Paul Mance was very, very knowledgeable. He had very good knowledge about everything, and he could fly. He was one of the best pilots I know of. But he was quite a character. Yeah.
But as far as advising her, you think that he would have done a very good job of advising her what to put on the airplane?
I think so. I think Paul Mance knew what the hell he was doing when he was her advisor.
Okay. Do you ever know why she did not work with him later on?
Who?
Later on, Amelia refused to work with him on the second.
Paul Mance?
Yeah. Do you have any idea why?
This I don't know. I don't remember this.
Yeah, later on she wouldn't work with him.
They had a falling out about a month or two before she left on the last flight.
They must have both got drunk on the same night.
Can I get your wife's full name?
Helen E. Gray.
And what was her maiden name?
Bungard.
How do you spell that?
B-U-N-G-A-R-D.
And where were you born?
In, let's see, a place called Rainier, Washington.
Oh, you're from Washington, Rainier, Washington.
And she was coming down from Seattle. What was the boat you were on when you were coming down?
The steamship Queen.
Let's see, what color are your eyes? Gray?
My eyes?
Blue, gray?
Gray. Gray. I don't know.
Gray eye. And how tall are you?
Just 5 foot 11 and a half.
Almost 6 feet. That's close enough.
Well, okay.